Sri Chaitanya Manuvistam Stapitam Lena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Tati Sapanantikam Vansakapaturubhyascha Kripasindhu Vaibhascha Patitanam Pamanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. Priyavrata was living as a renunciant, hearing from Narada Muni. He was the elder brother of King Uttanapad. Uttanapad was ruling the kingdom, and his descendants were as well. But after the Pachetas, there were no further descendants of Uttanapada. That means that there was only one person on the planet, practically speaking, powerful enough to rule. Because ruling the world, the country, this is not the job of an ordinary person. One has to be so powerful, so powerful. Prabhupada actually once said that to be king, one needs to be a Mahabhagavat. Actually, it is not the job, he said, for an ordinary devotee even. One has to be exalted, practically speaking, receiving dictation from Krishna. So, Priyavrata was performing austerities and hearing from Narada Muni, and he was constantly engaged in discussing Krishna Katha. So when his father, Swayambhuva Manu, approached him and requested that he take up the rulership, he was with Narada Muni. And he very boldly said, isn't there a danger that if I engage in this type of an activity, isn't there a danger that I may become entangled in material life? Now this is a legitimate question. There's a saying, fools walk in where angels dare not tread. So if we, or if an ordinary person, would be offered an opportunity of power, like some type of rulership, do they don't have scissors with felt on them or something, or sponges. How about razor blades? Yeah, that's, a knife can cut it. Anyway, I don't, go ahead. Do it all. You can do all those, huh? Okay. Not at once, anyway. One by one. Clip, clip, clip. In any case, you do your duty and I will try my best to do mine. So this is a legitimate question. An intelligent person considers what he's getting into before he gets into it. Not, oh, very enthusiastic in the mode of passion, imagining it's going to be like this, it's going to be like this. Intelligence means seeing things in the proper perspective. So Priyavrata understood what it meant to rule. He meant one is dealing with very powerful material energy. Very powerful. And when you're dealing with something powerful like the material energy, with the power of rulership, one tends, or any type of material energy that's powerful, one, if one is not sufficiently powerful oneself, one will become trapped by that thing that he's trying to use. It's like grabbing a tiger by the tail. You can't let it go. And it's pulling you around, and if you let it go, it'll eat you, but you're in such a dangerous position. So ruling is like that. Will I get... He's a renunciant. He's detached from everything he's hearing about Krishna. Isn't it dangerous for his spiritual life, he asks Manu. And the answer is, yes. It's very dangerous for one's spiritual life to deal with the material energy. But there's a way of safety, and that is going to be revealed. And one of the issues that really comes up is Krishna speaks of in the Bhagavad Gita, Shayan Swadharma Vigunat Paradamat Swanustitat. But one must do one's own duty and not the duty of another. So if ruling was the duty of Priyavrata, and how does one know what his duty is? It's actually Krishna's desire. If one is fortunate enough to know Krishna's desire for oneself, then one is very fortunate. And if one takes up a duty that is not one's own, even though it may be a very glorious or even superficially a glamorous duty, it will cause one's destruction, one's ruination, if it is not one's own duty. So in any case, Priyavrata asked, Manu, isn't this very dangerous for me to take up this kingship? So at that moment, Brahma, understanding the situation, knowing that Priyavrata is going to need some convincing, he appeared there on his swan carrier along with great sages. Because Narada Muni was there, and Narada Muni was a great preacher of renunciation, famous for this, telling people to give up their materialistic work. Just become devotion, be involved in devotional service. And Narada was the spiritual master of Priyavrata. Manu was the father. So Brahma came to make sure that Priyavrata would rule. Everyone, because he was Narada's father, he was the great-great-grandfather of Priyavrata, he was Manu's father, so he was the grandfather of Priyavrata, the father of Manu, the father of Narada Muni, so he was the most respected person. So when he arrived, everyone offered him so much respect. And he looked at Priyavrata with great compassion. Compassion because he was going to break his determination to live a life of austerity. And he wanted him clearly to engage as the king, to become the king. So now we're going to hear Brahma's instructions to Priyavrata. Brahma, the supreme person in the universe, he said, "My dear Priyavrata, kindly hear attentively what I shall say to you." What does it mean to hear attentively?
To hear with attention?
Yep, definitely. What does that mean? To be attentive, to hear with attention. Scott?
It's a reciprocal non-dealing. It's not just passively accepting words, but kind of mentally interacting with what's being said. Not interpreting, but seeing how I'm trying to understand it.
That's a method, I would say, of hearing attentively, to be active in how you hear. But what does attentively mean? Very, very simple.
With respect.
This hearing, it basically means hearing. Hearing means hearing attentively, listening very carefully to the words as they're coming from Lord Brahma. Hearing them with open ears. Not, in other words, what is one not doing? Because there's a way to hear inattentively. What does it mean to hear inattentively? The mind is continuously wandering, even though you're there, and of course you can't, it's hard, you're not going like this. You're not closing your ears in that way. But because the mind is wandering everywhere, one isn't really hearing with his full attention. So listen fully, he's saying. Hear this with great attention. Do not be jealous of the Supreme Lord, who is beyond our experimental measures. All of us, including Lord Shiva, your father, and the great sage Maharshi Narada, must carry out the order of the Supreme. We cannot deviate from his order. We'll read from several sections of Prabhupada's purport. Of the 12 great authorities in devotional service, how many great authorities in devotional service? Narval. How are you?
Good.
How's your mother?
She's
okay. How many authorities, Mahajans? 12. Out of the 12, four of them, Lord Brahma, his son Narada, Swayam Bhuvamanu, and Lord Shiva were present before Priyavrata. So that was such a heavy, heavy weight, devotees were present there. They were accompanied by many other authoritative sages. Brahma first wanted to impress upon Priyavrata that although these great personalities are all authorities, they cannot possibly disobey the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described in this verse as Deva, which means always glorious. So no matter how great one is, one must listen and follow, surrender to the orders of Krishna. No one is beyond the orders of the Lord. Here is the first point. Even if we have a high estimation of ourselves, however great we may be, we are not above surrender to Krishna. No one, no matter how great one is. A little further in the purport. When Lord Brahma went to induce Priyavrata to accept the responsibility for ruling the universe, he did not go whimsically. He was following the dictations of the Supreme Lord. Indeed, Brahma and other genuine authorities never do anything without his permission. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Tene Brahma Riddhaya Arikavaye. The Lord dictated Vedic knowledge to Brahma through his heart. The more a living entity is purified by devotional service, the more he comes in direct contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Lord Brahma, therefore, had not come to Priyavrata by his own whims. Rather, it is understood that he had been ordered to persuade Priyavrata by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities cannot be understood by material senses, and who is therefore described herein as aprameya. Thus, Lord Brahma first advised Priyavrata to hear his words with attention and without envy. Because attentiveness has to do with envy. Inattentiveness doesn't always have to do with envy, but one cannot listen to another with a full and open heart and mind if one is envious of that person. One cannot actually hear what the person is saying if one's mind is already made up, because one will be hearing one's own mind only. So Brahma is saying we all have to follow the Lord's order. He's preparing Priyavrata for telling him that it's the Lord's order that you do this service of ruling. So don't be envious of the position of the Lord, because everyone, every great person, the greatest person, Brahma was the greatest person in the universe, practically speaking. Everyone has to surrender to Krishna, either willingly. That was one of the first questions I asked Prabhupada, trying to be clever. I said, if we if Maya is Krishna's energy, and surrendering to Maya, being under the control of Maya, is also being under the control of Krishna. So if you're just in Maya, you're serving Krishna, and if you're a devotee, you're serving Krishna. So what's the difference? Why not just be in Maya? Pretty clever, huh? But Prabhupada told me, I don't think he thought it was very clever. he said that if we serve Krishna indirectly, in other words, if we serve Krishna's energy, Maya, then we'll get one result. And what's that result? Yes. And if we serve Krishna directly, because it's the natural consciousness of the soul, we get another result, and that is bliss. Like everyone in the country, they must follow the law. If one says, I don't have to follow the law, I'll break the law, and I'll get put in prison, and I'll still be following the law. So therefore, there's no difference. It's like that. But there is a difference. One's freedom in prison, one's freedom is so restricted. And it's so unnatural that one is actually miserable. So we should directly follow, surrender to Krishna. Brahma's next words. One cannot avoid, this is text 12, one cannot avoid the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not by the strength of severe austerities, an exalted Vedic education, or the power of mystic yoga, physical prowess, or intellectual activities. Nor can one use his power of religion, his material opulence, or any other means, either by himself or with the help of others, to defy the orders of the Supreme Lord. That is not possible for any living entity, living being, from Brahma down to the ant. Because Krishna, the Lord, is the supreme controller. He is the only one. Ekala Ishwara Krishna Ar Sava Britta. Everyone else, every other living entity is controlled by him. From Brahma to the ant. And we're all somewhere in between. So no matter what process we use to escape Krishna's control, we're unable. That's the point. So there's one word that Prabhupada's going to speaks about in the purport, manishaya. So we'll read what he says about that. The word manishaya, by intelligence, is of special significance. Priyavrata might argue that Lord Brahma was requesting him to accept family life and the responsibility for ruling a kingdom, although Narada Muni had advised him not to enter household life and be entangled in material affairs. Whom to accept would be a puzzle for Priyavrata. Because both Lord Brahma and Narada Muni are authorities, so he was bound to listen to both, and they were telling him opposite things. Mm-hmm. Under the circumstance, the use of the word manishaya is very appropriate, for it indicates, what does manishaya mean? Mm-hmm. By intelligence. It indicates that since both Narada Muni and Lord Brahma are authorized to give instructions, Priyavrata should neglect neither of them, but should use his intelligence to follow the advice of both. That is called reconciliation, to somehow or another reconcile both seemingly opposite instructions. And we have to do this a lot in life. We have to do this, yet we have to do this. We can't avoid doing that, and yet we have to do that. Now how to do both then? Narada Muni was practically speaking, telling him that you must become Krishna conscious. And Brahma was telling him what? You must rule the world. So seemingly, there is a contradiction. That's what he was fearing. And Narada Muni is saying, using the word manishyam, meaning these have to be reconciled so that you do both. You have to be Krishna conscious and rule. Be renounced and act as a king. This is actually a major part of the message of the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter especially. What is sannyas? Not the renunciation of action, but karma phal tyag, the renunciation of the fruits of actions. So Priyavrata should neglect neither of them, but should use his intelligence to follow the advice of both. To solve such dilemmas, Srila Rupa Goswami has given a very clear conception of intelligence. He says, Anasaptasya Vishayan, Yataham Upayunjata, Nirbanda Krishna Sambanda Yukta Varagimuchate. Vishayan, material affairs, should be accepted without attachment, and everything should be dovetailed with the service of the Lord. That is real intelligence, manisha. Becoming a family man or a king in the material world is not harmful if one accepts everything for Krishna's service. That necessitates clear intelligence. So very important advice here, because most people will not live lives of full renunciation. Especially full renunciation. Full renunciation means, like Priyavrata is living, complete austerity, away from the world, not dealing with the world at all. We must live in the material world, not must, but most of us, practically speaking, will live in the material world. Now, how to do that without getting entangled in it? Without getting trapped and caught by the material world. And why don't we want to get caught and trapped by the material world? Because it means death. It means an endless cycle of death, of deaths, which we would, of course, like to avoid. So intelligence means being in the material world, but not of the material world. And that's what Priyavrata is going to demonstrate. Brahma continues, my dear Priyavrata, by the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities accept different types of body for birth and death, activity, lamentation, illusion, fear of future dangers, happiness and distress. This is practically speaking the gamut, the scope of what everyone goes through in their life within our particular type of bodies and minds, birth, death, activity, lamentation, illusion, imagining this is going to happen, fear of future dangers, happiness, distress. One by one, these, like the waves of the ocean, wash over us. If we are in the mood of we are enjoyers, independent and enjoyers. The living entity, Prabhupada explains in his purport, we have freedom to act. So the first false action, improper action, illusion action, is to think that we are independent enjoyers and not accept our position as Krishna's servant. And then, according to how we act, we suffer and enjoy according to our choices. It's our choices. Our freedom will always be there. And the more we are in the higher modes of material nature, the more we have freedom. The more we are covered by ignorance, the less we have freedom. Like the animals and the plants and the insects. So much ignorance, practically speaking, no freedom. So we want to remove the coverings of ignorance. Increase our freedom. And yet, still we will get the reactions to how we act. We ourselves will get those reactions and will be covered and suffer or enjoy. And all this is done under the supervision of the Lord. This is all, this facility is given by the Lord. So Brahma is explaining we can't avoid the Lord. We either are in this situation in the material world, being washed over by those different emotions and thoughts and fears and pleasures and miseries and bodies and minds continuously changing. And then he says further, my dear boy, Priyavrata, all of us are bound by the Vedic injunctions to the divisions of vanashram according to our qualities and work. These divisions are difficult to avoid because they are scientifically arranged. We must therefore carry out our duties of vanashrama, vanashrama dharma, like bulls obliged to move according to the directions of a driver, pulling on ropes knotted to their nose. So Prabhupada, in his purport, I'll explain about that, what he explains in a moment, but the idea that Brahma is giving here is that we're in the material world within material bodies, and if we wish to make proper use of our human life, then we have to become bound by the Vedic injunctions, the Shastras. If we act whimsically, we will cause ourselves so much problems. Even if we have material desires, if we try to satisfy them in a religious way, according to Shastra, then those desires will gradually lessen and we will become purified. If, on the other hand, if we try to become happy, satisfy our desires, just following our mind, acting whimsically, the result is nagatikitopi, destination unknown. Because the passion which has bred these desires will turn to ignorance, and the ignorance will turn to deeper ignorance. And on the other hand, if we follow the vanashrama system, then we will become purified and the passion will be sublimated to goodness. So therefore we are obligated, we must carry out the duties of vanashrama dharma, like bulls obliged to move according to the direction of the driver, pulling on ropes knotted to their noses. Even though the bulls are so powerful, when they have that ring or the rope through their nose, they have to go in the direction that they are pulled. So regardless of how powerful we think we are, if we don't want to be degraded, if we want to be elevated, even if we have our own desires, we should follow Shastra. So Srila Prabhupada in his purport, he makes many points. One is, one of the main points is that this Vedic system, he explains even, there is a controversy about the Vanashrama Dharma. Some say that one receives a body according to the guna and karma of his last life. According to the activities of his last life and qualities he had in his last life, he has a body. And it is therefore it's one's birth that determines his social status, whether one is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Sudra. Others say, however, it is not one's birth according to the guna and karma of his past life. That is not the essential consideration. Because one can change one's qualities even in this life. One can get worse or one can get better in this life. So Prabhupada explains, quoting Prahlad Maharaj and Yudhisthira, Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, Narada Muni, that it's this life's qualities that determines what activities one should follow. And again, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the purpose of vanashrama is freeing us ultimately, having us act according to who we are, but in such a way that we become free from material bondage. And the purpose of vanashrama is to please Krishna ultimately. Vanashrama acharavata. So it moves one towards the goal, gradually towards the goal of life. So Priyavrata is, what type of family is he born in, and what type of inherent nature does he have? He's a Kshatriya. and he should follow his duties, Brahma is saying. My dear Priyavrata, text 15, according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. Listen to this one. This is very interesting. According to our association with different modes of material nature, according to our karma, according to what we've done in previous lives, according to what we've done in this life, we have a particular body, prarabdha karma. We have a particular nature, and in this body, our karma is practically held. We carry it with us by our desires. So we have certain desires, we have a certain nature. Some people's natures are very exalted. Some are less exalted. Some are degraded. Now, this is all due to the association of the modes of material nature. So according to our association with different modes of material nature, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives us our specific bodies and the happiness and distress we achieve. This is our karma. We all have a certain fate. We have a fate. We all have dreams for happiness, unlimited happiness and success. But our fate may not match those dreams. We have to get distress when we don't want it. We don't get as much happiness as we do want. This is karma. So the happiness and distress we will achieve is predetermined. One must therefore, here's his instruction, one must therefore remain situated as he is and be conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead exactly as a blind man is led by a person who has eyes with which to see. Brahma is explaining that we're here in this world and we have our karma. We don't like suffering. But if we use our own defective vision to mitigate, to make the attempt to remove the suffering and increase our happiness, what is he comparing such an attempt to? A blind man. We are blind in this world. We don't really know where to look for happiness. We try so many things. And a blind man cannot see, and we cannot see the right way to act unless we have the division, we have the shastric injunctions and the sadhus to guide us. So therefore he's saying, you have a plan on what you want to do. And that plan is going to give you great happiness. Like everyone's plan is like that, especially when we're young. We have dreams and plans, and we see our life stretching in front of us. And it has so many possibilities, all glittering like diamonds and rubies and pearls. But by the time we're older, if we've tried those things, we've been smashed, we've been stepped on, we've been crushed. And it hasn't delivered at all. And what do we usually do? We blame, oh, it's this person's fault, or it's this person's fault, or it's this person's fault. But actually, the fault is karma. And whose fault is our karma? Yeah, it's not Krishna's. It's our own. So we humbly are meant to accept our position and what to do. We should act like a blind man led by a person who has eyes to see. And who should be leading us? It's Krishna in the form of Shastra and Sadhus. So we should remain in our situation along with its happinesses and along with its miseries, and surrender to Krishna within that situation and learn the art of pleasing Krishna in whatever situation we are in. Because what does it take to please Krishna? We're imagining, if I become great, then I can... But no, patram pushpam palam doyam yomam bhakta prayachati taraham bhaktyuparitam asnami paritatmana. Even a leaf, fruit, water, flower, if offered with devotion, Krishna says, asnami, I will take it or accept it if it's offered with devotion. So whatever our situation is, let us do that with devotion and surrender to Krishna in that situation. Now, Prabhupada's going to speak further on this point. In Bhagavad Gita, therefore, Lord Krishna says, Sarvadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other engagements, simply surrender unto me and follow me. This process of surrendering by following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not meant for any particular caste or creed. A Brahmin can surrender and so can a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. Everyone can adopt this process. As stated in this verse, Chashushmatanda Eva Niyamana. One should follow the Lord the way a blind man follows a person who has eyes. If we follow the Supreme Personality of Godhead by following the directions he gives in the Vedas and Bhagavad Gita, our lives will be successful. The Lord therefore says, so what is the following of him that he wants? Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhirji mam namaskaru mam evyasya sitattam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me, become my devotee, and offer respect and obeisances unto me. Then you will certainly come back home, back to Godhead. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. This instruction is meant for everyone. Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. If anyone from any division of life surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and follows his instructions, his life will be successful. The previous verse has given the analogy of bulls moving under the direction of the driver of a bullock cart. The bulls, being completely surrendered to the driver, remain wherever he wants to place them and eats whatever he wants them to eat. Now this is very difficult. Similarly, listen attentively to these words. Being completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should not aspire for happiness or regret distress. We must be satisfied with the position allotted to us by the Lord. We should follow the path of devotional service and not be dissatisfied with the happiness and distress He has given. And while in the position, the material position that we happen to be in according to our karma, according to our body, we should make spiritual advancement, develop our love for Krishna. So Prabhupada explains that. The highest position of perfection is by following the Lord's instructions. The entire world is working under the influence of the modes of material nature, especially ignorance and passion. But if people engage in hearing and chanting about the glories of the Supreme Lord, their lives can be successful and they can be elevated to the highest perfection. So give up the desire for material perfection and take up strongly the desire for spiritual perfection. In the Brihad Naradiya Purana, therefore, it is said, Hariyanama, 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 Eva Kebalam, Kaloanasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva, Gatyanayata. In this age of Kali, there is no other way, no other way, no other way for spiritual perfection than the holy name, the holy name, the holy name of the Lord. Everyone should be given the chance to hear the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For thus, one will gradually come to understand his real position in life and be elevated to the transcendental position above the mode of goodness. Because the particular material position we're in, with its strengths and weaknesses, is just illusion. It actually has nothing to do with us at all. Thus, all impediments by chanting Krishna's names to progress will be cut to pieces. In conclusion, therefore, we must be satisfied in whatever position we have been put in by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we should try to engage ourselves in His devotional service, then our lives will be successful. So work for Krishna's satisfaction. That's the point. Whatever position you're in, even if you're liberated, as he's going to explain now. And thus, in Krishna consciousness, by acting for Krishna, all actions that we perform will be without reactions. So Brahma continues, even if one is liberated, he nevertheless accepts the body he has received according to his past karma. So he's telling him, even if you have a particular body now and a particular duty, you should do it. Without misconceptions, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma the way an awakened person regards a dream. This is the description of a liberated person. Just see from this, what is the difference between how a liberated person views life and how a conditioned soul views life? Listen, I'll ask. I'd like to hear your opinion. Without misconception, however, he regards his enjoyment and suffering due to that karma in the way an awakened person regards a dream he had while sleeping. He thus remains steadfast and never works to achieve another material body under the influence of the three modes of material nature. So how? So whether if you're conditioned, you should work according to Krishna's instructions, following your duty, and even if you're liberated, you should do the same. How does a liberated person deal with it? What is the example that's used?
Like a dream.
What about like a dream? An awakened person sees a dream. So how does an awakened person see his dream?
Imagination.
Yeah, he sees an imagination or...
Well, it's irrelevant to what he has to do.
Yeah, to his real life. And sometimes we get trapped in a dream world. How many times every day we fantasize about things? But no, we shouldn't get involved in the dream world. What the real world is what we should be involved in. What is the real world? The real world is what is going on the soul level. Awaken that life, our eternal relationship with Krishna, and act in the dream world according to one's duties, is according to how one is required to act. But one shouldn't take it extremely seriously, the happinesses and distresses. Just like if in a dream you gain, someone gives you thousands and thousands of pieces of gold, or on the other hand, if someone shoots you in a dream. Did you ever have that experience here in a dream? And something horrible is happening and you just say, hey, wait a second, I'm just going to wake up. This is ridiculous. That happens, Edward? Yeah, a few times. But when we get to gold or something like that, we say, hey, wait a second. Yeah, so I don't want to live in this world. So we don't have to live. So something is happening, some pleasure, some misery may be happening in the dream world, but if we have a real life going on, we don't have to live in that world. So the real art is to awaken the real life. And until we do that, we'll be forced to live in the dream world of according to our karma. So if we awaken our Krishna consciousness, our love for Krishna, this material world seems so insignificant. The miseries are insignificant. The pleasures are insignificant. And everything in between, insignificant. The anxieties, insignificance. The gloriousnesses, the fame, this, that, all insignificant. If we awaken our real life, if we become Atmariti, Atmarama, Krishna conscious, and then acting with detachment, this is the hints that Brahma is giving him, then there will be no reactions. You will not become entangled. And then such a person focused in devotional service, he'll go back home, back to Godhead. So now he's increasing his pressure to convince him. Even if you go from forest to forest, because he's a liberated person practically, one who is not self-controlled must always fear material bondage because he's living with his six co-wives, the mind and the knowledge-acquiring senses. Even in householder life, however, cannot harm a self-satisfied, learned man who has conquered his senses. So if you are self-controlled, he says, even if you do get married, you won't be in difficulty. And if you are not self-controlled, even if you go to the forest, you will be in difficulty. Because you'll take your mind with you. And your senses. So the real issue isn't whether you're going to be renounced or whether you're going to be the king. The real issue is whether you're going to be self-controlled or not. So get to the point. This is the real issue. Prabhupada's purport. Srila Narottama Das Thakur has sung Grihe va vanate takke ha goranga bale dake. Whether one is situated in the forest or at home, if he is engaged in the devotional service of Lord Chaitanya, he is a liberated person. Ha goranga dake. That means call out goranga. Here this is also repeated. For one who has not controlled his senses, going to the forest to become a so-called yogi is meaningless because his uncontrolled mind and senses are going with him. He cannot achieve anything, even by giving up household. Formerly, many mercantile men from the upcountry of India used to go to Bengal, and thus there is a familiar saying, if you go to Bengal, your fortune will go with you, or you take your forehead with you, because that's one way of reading one's fortune. Because we know that palm reading, but also you can read it by looking at the lines on someone's forehead. So you take your forehead with you when you go to the forest. No matter where you go, you take your forehead with you. You take your fortune with you. Our first concern, therefore, should be to control the senses. And since the senses cannot be controlled unless engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, our most important duty is to engage the senses in devotional service. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchite. Bhakti means engagement of the purified senses in the service of the Lord. Here, Lord Brahma indicates that instead of going to the forest with uncontrolled senses, it is better and more secure to engage the senses in the service of the Lord. Even household life can do no harm to a self-controlled person acting in this way. It cannot force him into material bondage. Srila Rupa Goswami has further enunciated this point. Ihayasya hare dasye kamana manasa gira nikala sappiyavasta su jivan muktasu uchate. Regardless of one's circumstances, if one fully engages his activities, mind, and words in the devotional service of the Lord, he should be understood to be a liberated person. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a responsible officer and householder, yet his service to the cause of expanding the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is unique. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, Durdan tendriya kala sarpapatali prakhatta dam strayate. The sense organs are certainly our greatest enemies, and they are therefore compared to venomous serpents. However, if a venomous serpent is bereft of its poison fangs, it is no longer fearful. Similarly, if the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, there is no need to fear their activities. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement move within this material world, but because their senses are fully engaged in the service of the Lord, they are always aloof from the material world. They are always living in a transcendental position. So, this is a real devotee. So Priyavrata is being preached to very strongly. You follow Krishna's order, engage in his service. Your mind should be engaged, your senses should be engaged, and you won't have any difficulty, you won't become entangled. One who is situated in household life, text 18, and who systematically conquers his mind and five sense organs is like a king in the fortress who conquers his powerful enemies. After one has been trained in household life and his lusty desires have decreased, he can move anywhere without danger. So he's saying that if the household, the ashram, is a secure situation to bring the senses under control, and if the senses and mind aren't under control, one is in a very dangerous situation, no matter where one is. So he's preaching to him to get him to do what he wants to, which is Krishna's order. My dear Priyavrata, text 19, seek shelter. So in this verse he describes the household life as a fortress. Now the real fortress is going to be described by Brahma. My dear Priyavrata, seek shelter inside the opening in the lotus of the feet of the Lord, whose navel is also like a lotus. Thus conquer the six sense organs, the mind and knowledge acquiring senses. Accept material enjoyment because the Lord, extraordinarily, has ordered you to do this. You will thus always be liberated from material association and be able to carry out the Lord's orders in your constitutional position. So, the point that Narada Muni is making, and this is the last verse of his instructions, is that the secure position, whether you're in the forest or a king, whether you're a householder, whether you're a brahmachari, sannyasi, vanaprastha, the secure position is that one is engaged in Krishna's service fully. One's senses and mind, especially the mind, is the difficult one. Bhakti is really the key in this. How to be secure regardless of our position within the material world. Just accept whatever position we're in, whatever nature we have, whatever karma we have, and develop bhakti. And that is the safe position, and one won't get entangled in the material world. And if one doesn't develop bhakti, whatever situation one is in, is a dangerous situation. That is the point he's making. Lord Brahma herein advises Priyavrata to remain transcendental in the fortress, not of family life, but the fortress of the lotus feet of the Lord. When a bumblebee enters the opening of a lotus flower and drinks its honey, it's fully protected by the petals of the lotus. The bee is undisturbed by the sunshine and other external influences. Similarly, one who always seeks shelter at the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead is protected from all dangers. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 14th chapter, it means by Lord Brahma, Samasrita ye parapalava plavam mahat padam punya yashom varadi bhavam mudir vatsapadam param padam param param yad vipadam natesham. That the material world, the ocean, the insurpassable ocean of the material world shrinks to the size of vatsapadam, the size of the water that fills a calf's hoofprint, if we take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Mahat padam punyaya shomarari. Bhavam Buddhiya, the ocean of birth and death. Vatsapadam, to the water of a calf's hoofprint. And we escape padam padam yad vipadam. Vipadam means dangerous place. The material world is a dangerous place. We proceed according to our own whim, our own desires, our own guesswork, how we're going to be happy. And we fall into trouble. It's inevitable. So whatever situation we find ourselves in, ha goranga dake, dake or dako? Ha goranga bhale dake. Call out Goranga's name and engage in his service. Our actual duty is to carry out the supreme order of the personality of Godhead. If we are fixed in our determination to carry out the supreme order of the Lord, we are always secure, regardless of where we are situated, whether in hell or in heaven. And conversely, if we're not, don't have that fixed determination, we are insecure, no matter where we are situated, in hell or in heaven. Herein the word prakritim bhajasva is very significant. Prakritim refers to one's constitutional position. Every living entity has the constitutional position of being an eternal servant of God. Therefore Lord Brahma advises Priyavrata, be situated in your original position as an eternal servant of the Lord. If you carry out his order, you will never fall, even in the midst of material enjoyment. Material enjoyment achieved by dint of one's fruit of activities differs from material enjoyment given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee sometimes appears to be in a very opulent position, but he accepts that position to follow the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Who's an example of that? We read in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Who was given opulence directly by the Lord? Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Siddhama Brahmana. Because he was averse, and the Lord gave him opulence to use in Krishna's service. A devotee is never affected by material influences. The devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement are preaching all over the world in accordance with the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They have to meet many karmis, but by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are unaffected by material influences. So Prabhupada had very, very, very high expectations of the devotees. He has blessed them. Mahaprabhu has blessed them, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Kabu na badibe tomara bisha taranga punarapie tane pave mora sangha. A sincere devotee who engages in the service of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by preaching his cult all over the world will never be affected by vishaya taranga, the waves of material life, material influences. On the contrary, in due course of time, he will return to the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and will thus have perpetual association with him. So the trick is, Prabhupada explains here, a sincere devotee. So what is the catch? What is the challenge? A sincere devotee who engages in the service of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by preaching his cult all over the world will never be affected by vishaya taranga, material influences. What's the...
To be free from insincerity.
Yeah, to be sincere, to be free from insincerity. That is always the difficulty, to be sincere. Sincerity means Krishna consciousness. One time Prabhupada was asked, this was at, I think at 26 Second Avenue, one of the devotees was asking about, is this philosopher Krishna conscious? Is this philosopher, Western philosophers, Kant Krishna conscious? Is this one Krishna conscious? Is Heidegger Krishna conscious? And Prabhupada's reply was, their sincerity is their Krishna consciousness. So however sincere someone is, and we're not always the ones to judge that. That's for Krishna to judge, ultimately. That is Krishna consciousness. Sasra? Who is that calling?
It's
Maybe it's Krishna. So after being, there's a little more left in this section that I'd like to read. So after being, Sukadeva Goswami continued, after being thus fully instructed by Lord Brahma, who is the spiritual master of the three worlds, Priyavrata, his own position being inferior, offered obeisances. He accepted the order and carried it out with great respect. Purport. Sri Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma. Therefore, according to social etiquette, his position was inferior. It is the duty of the inferior to carry out the order of the superior with great respect. Priyavrata immediately said, "Yes, sir, I shall carry out your order." Priyavrata is described as a Mahabhagavat, a great devotee. The duty of a great devotee is to carry out the order of the spiritual master, or the spiritual master of the spiritual master in the parampara system. As described in Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam, one has to receive the instructions of the Supreme Lord through the disciplic chain of spiritual masters. A devotee of the Lord always considers himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord. And the final verse we'll read. Lord Brahma was then worshipped by Manu, who respectfully satisfied him as well as he could. Priyavrata and Narada also looked upon Brahma with no tinge of resentment. Having engaged Priyavrata in accepting his father's request, Lord Brahma returned to his own abode, Satyaloka, which is indescribable by the endeavor of mundane minds or words. And we'll read the first paragraph of the purport. Manu was certainly very satisfied that Lord Brahma had persuaded his son Priyavrata to take responsibility for ruling the world. Priyavrata and Narada were also very satisfied. Although Brahma had forced Priyavrata to accept the management of worldly affairs, thus breaking his vow to remain brahmachari and completely engaged in devotional service, Narada and Priyavrata did not look upon Lord Brahma with resentment. Narada was not at all sorry that he had been frustrated in making Priyavrata a disciple. Both Priyavrata and Narada were exalted personalities who knew how to respect Lord Brahma. Therefore, instead of looking upon Brahma with resentment, they very feelingly offered him their respect. Lord Brahma then returned to his celestial abode, known as Satyaloka, which is described here as being impeccable and being unapproachable by words. Okay. Thank you very much. You're all very, very patient and quite attentive. So much, I did so much reading of purports, important purports. But you all listened very carefully. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
When Lord Brahma came to instruct Priyavrata, he could have just come and said, "Do this because I'm challenging you," because he was a higher authority. But it's he explained the philosophy we're using to convince Priyavrata to do his duty. And I was just thinking of it, we often hear that we have to accept instructions of authorities, but it seems that there's a certain way of passing down those instructions that help the disciple or the one who's learning to accept those instructions more freely.
What was the main point that he made?
Brahma made to Priyavrata.
Yeah.
Act according to his nature. That will please the Lord.
So what was the main point?
Become Krishna conscious.
That you have to please the Lord. He was the authority that he was calling upon, that we all have to follow authority. He said, myself, all these sages, there were four Mahajans there, we're all in the same position. We're all tiny, insignificant souls, and we have to follow the Lord. And what is the Lord's order? I'm telling you that. And here you have your duties, and we should do that. But the main point was that we all have to, we should, it's in our interest, not we have to. Or in one sense, we have to, because we can surrender to the Lord's Maya or surrender to Him directly. But we, either way, we have to, but it's in our interest to give ourselves to Krishna sincerely. So your point was that there are better ways of preaching and worse ways of preaching. So well, Prabhupada said that the spiritual master never says surrender to me, he says surrender to Krishna. So, same point. Any other comments or questions?
Yeah. Yeah, so if the main point that Brahma's making is that he should do everything in the service for the pleasure of the Lord, then what is the importance of the aspect about Varnashram and following his duty there? Because
this was his duty.
But isn't it also said that if somebody is already renounced and fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, that he doesn't necessarily have to follow those kind of social
yes. But what happens if Krishna wants you to?
So that's what I mean. So the main point is that Krishna wanted him to, not that everybody is obliged to follow Varnashram, because it is also the case that some persons are outside of Varnashram.
Yes.
Especially somebody like him who was so fully engaged with no idea at that stage.
Yes, but he was coming as the representative of Krishna. Yeah. But that's how he presented it. This is your duty. So he might not have his presentation, because Priyavrata could have said, brought up that point. I'm outside of Varnashrama because I'm already, the purpose of Varnashrama is to bring one to Krishna consciousness, and I'm engaged in Krishna consciousness, therefore I don't have to follow Varnashrama. So why didn't he say that? You know, yeah, why?
Because the authorities were there.
And they were all agreeing with Brahma.
Yeah, I can see that point. Yeah. I just can't quite understand why Brahma used that particular argument in that case.
The first thing he said is basically, we have to follow Krishna, because he's indirect speaking too. Because he didn't. I don't know exactly know the mind of Lord Brahma, but if he says it's your duty, you should do your duty, and this is what your duty is according to Varnashrama, that's one thing. Then what is the authority that he's pointing to? The Varnashrama system, which is set up by Krishna, right, in Shastra. But if he says do your duty, and your duty is to be the king, what's the duty he's pointing to? Who's telling him that he has to be the king? It's him.
Yeah.
So which is a better authority to point to? Oneself or the Shastra?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. Any other questions?
It's one thing in a situation where you've had the happiness and the stress that one's in and tries to make the best of it, or carry on serving the Lord. Does it entail reducing our expectations quite dramatically? Does that
If you want to be satisfied, you have to reduce your expectations quite dramatically. Yes, radically. Yes, exactly the point. Everything your mom and dad told you that you should be when you grow up, you have to forget it. And you should just accept who you are, what you are, and try to develop bhakti. And then if Krishna wants you to do something wonderful, he'll let you know. Yeah, it's very, very difficult. Because the culture that we're part of teaches that, you know, a man can... A woman can rise to the top by his own. It all depends on your desire, the power of positive thinking. And especially, that's the United States creed. You know, no matter what your birth is, you can rise up and be the president of the United States or something like that. You can rise up, just desire, you know, choose your...
I think in the United States you can do that. Look at the presidents they have.
Detect some cynicism in there. Any jerk can become president. But the point being, it really doesn't, that's not how we should think, that I can become anything according to me, and I am as if the world moves according to my desire. And just imagine what happens when there's, 500 people all desiring that. They're all thinking it all depends on me. Then they basically just kill each other in one form or another, psychically, physically, in so many ways. So what's being recommended is the level where our freedom truly exists on, is to develop bhakti, and that's the real challenge. That's the real challenge, to actually develop devotion for Krishna. And I remember when we were first started chanting Hare Krishna, they always used to tell the story of Hanuman and I've heard it as a spider. Hanuman and a spider. But later on we hear that it may be not a spider, but one of those little squirrels. Hanuman and the squirrel. How Hanuman was throwing big rocks, huge boulders into the ocean to build the bridge. And I'll tell it the way I heard it. A little spider was flicking grains of sand in. And they were all, the big monkeys were, langur, were moving and pushing and bravado. And they, move out of the way, we're doing the real work. Well, you're useless. What is a grain of sand? And then Lord Ram said, no, equal. Because after all, Lord Ram needed neither boulders nor grains of sand. So this is the real... Not to become proud that Krishna has given us ability to do something, and not to become forlorn because we have little ability. Just whatever we have, let us offer that, and cooperatively, and then it becomes quite wonderful if we cooperate in that way. Let everyone offer according to their ability, not hold back, not be lazy, not use that as an excuse to not offer something that we should, and work hard, or the other way around. I've been given so many wonderful abilities, therefore I should be in control and in charge. No, just take it easy and just try to develop Krishna consciousness and try to become servants. Servants. Okay, let's stop. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Priyavatam ki jai.